Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Tyler is my daddy.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily. Presented by Mokarum Injury Lawyers.
Yes, sir. Dirty's Daily, powered by Mokarum Injury Lawyers. Hard as hell to say, easy to dial 281-222-2222. Now, the fellas are not here. Luke Morrow sitting in alongside Brandon Scott, but we'll still hold it down here for Dirty's Daily anyways. Clint will be back tomorrow. He'll be in the rest of the week. B. Scott, you'll be here with him the next couple of days.
We'll see.
Keep put a pin in that.
Yeah. But you're right. That is the plan.
Yes, it's the plan. But whatever that expression is, best laid, best made plans, whatever it is, you finish the rest. But we're here today, happy to be doing so, and we'll handle Dirty's Daily today. You can always text the show, 713-572-4610. Brandon, you were out at OTAs today, and so the big story, of course, is keeping an eye on C.J. Stroud. He was not throwing or did not throw again today. We heard from D'Amico Ryans talk about it. But for being there in person, as we go another day without any throwing, just what were your takeaways? Well, first let me start with this. What were like the vibes of being there in person specifically towards C.J. Stroud? As you talk to the other people, as you watch the team, how did it feel with Stroud being unable to throw today?
Yeah, so, you know, a thing that happens at practice and especially at an OTA or training camp is attendance. And this carries over into the regular season. So that's one of the things that's going to happen pretty much at every practice. But like aside from that, the one thing other than like just checking off boxes or checking off numbers, if you will, to see like go down the roster list, who's here, who's doing what, who's working off to the side, who do you see, who do you not? It's what exactly is C.J. Stroud doing? And you can hear all of us are watching. And then you can hear the whispers and you're even asking yourself, did you see, like if you look over to the side and you miss something, hey, did CJ throw? Have you seen him throw? Like basically everybody asks the question to each other. You know, we're all asking that. So nothing from CJ. So it is a thing there at practice that, you know, kind of has just sort of metastasized, if you will. It started off as kind of a small thing in the beginning, the first day. And once you get to a third day, and this is just the third day that we've watched, they've been out there much more than that, it becomes more of a thing. So the vibes out there are, hey, let's watch out for CJ. Let's see what CJ's doing. And then that's going to inform our questioning after the practice is over. And of course, it's going to inform the conversations that we have, like on the radio, and the pieces that we write in our respective publications. Like, this is going to be the lead. And of course, like we mentioned earlier in the show, it's something that led SportsCenter, the last SportsCenter edition that we were watching. I'm pretty sure it's something that we're going to see later in the night on SportsCenter. D'Amico Ryans himself, not just down there on the ticker, not just a headline on ESPN.com, but an actual, what we call in the TV business, a SOT, sound on tape, of D'Amico Ryans answering these very questions, you know. So it is a much bigger story today than it was, let's say, 6 days ago. So I mean, that those are the vibes. All eyes on CJ Stroud, and then all questions on whoever can answer a question about CJ Stroud.
Knowing what you do know, and obviously the Texans have been very secretive about this, but where's your let's say panic meter, we'll call it, on a scale of 1 to 10 in regards to the Texans starting quarterback right now, what number would you place it at?
So I'm going to keep the panic pretty much down to a minimum, but I also don't want to minimize the importance of him being out there or the importance of him just simply being healthy. So like, if you're asking me about how panicked I am, it's probably around a 4, okay, in terms of like actual panic, if we're going to use the term literally. But in terms of how big of a concern it is or how important it is, I mean, it's the highest number that you can get. Like, it's got to be a 10 because you can't, I don't think you can overstate the importance of having, especially when you have a franchise quarterback. If he was just some slap, you know what, quarterback, then I don't think it'd be that big of a deal at all. He's just a middling guy, you know, replacement level. But we're all under the impression that CJ Stroud is a high level, top level quarterback. And you don't just, those guys don't grow on trees. You don't just easily replace them. So, like, to hell with depth at a position. CJ Stroud ain't out there, cancel Christmas. So, you know, like, it's super important. And I think that, you know, right now we're at a point in the season where we don't need to panic, but it's obviously something that you have to be concerned about and keep an eye on and continue to monitor because of how important he is to the overall operation and goals that the team has in 2025.
I want to use Dirty's Daily today to run through some of these Texans talkers and some of your thoughts coming out of OTAs after spending some time over there. So let me ask you about Christian Harris. And I believe D'Amico was asked about Christian Harris as well today. But, you know, last year when we talk about these injuries that drag on, and we always focus on the Astros, and rightfully so, because the many examples there, most notably Kyle Tucker and Jordan. But when it comes to the Texans, Christian Harris was that their version last year, where we were just trying to figure out when he was going to come back, what was the injury. And despite some high expectations, last year was kind of a lost season for him. Where are you right now on Christian Harris, or where are the Texans with Christian Harris after spending some time over there for OTAs?
Yeah, and so this was the other thing. You know, CJ Stroud was obviously the big focus, but this was the other thing that I was asking about even before we got to D'Amico Ryans, just asking some of the reporters that are even more connected than I am, the ones that are in contact with Christian Harris's agents, because there are multiple agents apparently for Christian Harris. Like, and they're not getting too many answers. And so I took it to D'Amico Ryans. I asked him after the practice, like, what is their sort of a generic question of, hey, what's the plan to get Christian Harris, let's say, back to form or what he was 2 seasons ago as opposed to last year? And we got a very short answer of, you know, he's on the right track to be ready for training camp. But for me, Luke, Christian Harris is the most curious case, like even more so than CJ. CJ Stroud is an infinitely more important situation and a more important case. But I think, you know, pretty straightforward. Seems like sore shoulder, doesn't seem catastrophic. I'd be shocked if he's not like ready to go week 1 or if he's not ready to go for training camp. Like, that's when the panic meter starts to go up. But with Christian Harris, man, we haven't seen him look the same since he was running down Lamar Jackson in the divisional round two seasons ago now. And like you mentioned, last year was a lost year. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like he was on his way. And this is why this is important. It seemed like he was just on his way to becoming one of those impact guys, one of those like marquee guys on the defense. And you look up, and two rookies last year, second year guys now, but two rookie guys passed him up in the hierarchy there, in Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock. Like, those are guys that I'm much more feeling like I can depend on, rely on, and expect more out of to contribute to the defense overall than a guy who was on the team 2 years before them. And again, was chasing around Lamar Jackson in a playoff game, like specifically given that assignment. So Where I'm at is uneasy. He is the most curious case of them all, and I just can't quite figure it out. I wish I had a better answer, and that's the concerning part, is that I don't. I feel like I got far more questions than answers when it comes to Christian Harris.
Yeah, I think that puts it well. We do have that audio, but I figured not even worth playing it because it was so short. It's a 5-second clip of D'Amico who said what? He's working hard and will be ready for camp. So yeah. keep our eye out.
Yeah, I'm the one that asked the question, and I wasn't expecting to get an elaborate answer because you can tell D'Amico just does not like talking about injuries. I don't know any coach that does, football coach anyway, that does.
We don't like that.
And I think that, you know, it's part coach, but then also, like, he's a lifer, right? So he's a former player. You know, it makes sense that he would want to protect the shield. I know that's normally associated with the league, but yeah. The shield in this case is the team, the Texans team that he's, you know, in charge of running. But it is an odd thing that a guy that, at least I was under the impression, was supposed to be as important to the overall operation as he was, plays a position. I know not the exact same linebacker position, but at least is a linebacker in the way that D'Amico Ryans is a former linebacker's coach, and admittedly continues to have a heart for linebackers, right? Has a bias toward linebackers, even as a defensive coordinator, which he once was, and as a head coach, which he is now, still cares a lot about linebacker play. And one of your, I would say, probably your most talented guy, just like raw talent, at that position is somebody that we're not really sure what his status is or how much he's going to be able to contribute. Like, think about it. Not only was he hurt last year, but when he came back, still didn't quite look the same, didn't look great out there, and then suffered another injury. Like, everybody knows about the calf injury from last year that held him out for so long, but little is talked about the ankle injury that, you know, sidelined him toward the end of the season, or limited him at least toward the end of the season, and appears to be what's limiting him now. I don't know if it's the same ankle injury or if it's a new ankle injury, but it does appear that he's got another ankle or has an ankle, like right now. I don't think it's the calf. I think it's the ankle right now. Okay, what is the effect of that? What does it all mean? And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
How about our guy B. Scott, though, asking the good questions today? You got that answer out of Christian Kirk about the offense, asking D'Amico about Christian Harris.
Skeezy always bringing
it. You know what? And I appreciate that, but I do want to just kind of give us all collectively, everybody that was there, the entire press corps, a pat on the back. I don't think we always do a good job, just in the interest of transparency here. I don't think we always do a great job of asking the necessary and great questions. I thought we did that today. And kudos to us. Will Kunkel from Fox 26 was the one that asked about the injury part, or I'm sorry, the surgery question.
Oh, yeah.
Which had not been asked before and I think needed to be asked at some point. I'm glad that he did it. And D'Amico's sort of non-answer, similar to what I said earlier, the silence was deafening. And I know he wasn't silent, but he didn't answer the question. It was a direct question, didn't give a direct answer.
Whew.
I don't want to read too much into it, but it's hard not to read something into it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You expect a direct answer to a direct question, and you didn't get it.
Yeah, and we'll play that audio again coming up at 5 o'clock if you didn't hear from the head coach earlier today. Third and final thing I wanted to get to from the Texans OTAs with you is, you know, we got the news of the Ronald Darby retirement yesterday, but with the top-end talent, we talked about Darby's retirement earlier and how, you know, that's a depth piece, it's a veteran piece, it's a guy you should be able to replace this offseason. Even with that news, which, despite some Texans fans freaking out, I don't think it was a huge piece of news, did you come away from OTAs feeling like, hey, this secondary could be one of the best in football?
I do. I do think that the secondary can be one of the best in football, but again, that's got to do with the top end of the talent, the front end of what they got going on. Because I'll say this, I don't think Ronald Darby retiring is that significant, but I do think now more than ever, or now more than before, I should say, that Derek Stingley Jr. and Kamari Lassiter got to stay healthy. Like, those guys just flat out can't get injured, or not, at least not significantly injured. They missed some time, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on a number of guys. Obviously, whoever comes in and fills in for them, I don't think is going to be nearly as good or as talented. And so pressure on them to at least try to perform close to that level, or to not be a significant drop off. I think more than anything, it'll put more pressure on the guys up front, who I think are the engine of the defense. But to give some relief on those guys who got to cover, you're going to have to shorten the amount of time that they got to cover. Because I don't think that, God forbid it's Derek Stingley, but you don't have a guy like that. And then Kamari Lassiter, for as far as number two corners go, probably close to as good as you can get. I just don't think you can afford it. You can't afford it, and so now it means that Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter, even the guys inside, they got to get home a lot quicker. I'm curious to know, does that make you blitz more or blitz even less? And I know they don't even like the blitz a whole lot. They're very selective and you know, very selective with how much they blitz and when they do it. So does that put more pressure on you to blitz and try to, you know, put pressure on the offense? Or do you feel like, hey, you know, we can't afford to do that because we don't have the guys that can cover, you know, that can cover the same. So it'll be interesting to see what is the residual effect of if something happens to one of those guys, given that they don't have a Ronald Darby or even like a Jeff Okuda, you know, who wasn't healthy for most of last year and just, you know, probably wasn't as effective as they wanted him to be. But you just don't have that. You don't have the depth at that position that you would ideally have. And I mean, I guess who does have depth at corner? But you would like to see it be a little bit more comforting than what it is.
And then I had to squeeze this in. I saw this story yesterday. I didn't know where to fit it into any show, but I figured why not here at Dirty's Daily. Oh, last thing, by the way, in the secondary, Pro Football Focus did do strengths and weaknesses for every team. No surprise, the Texans' strength, according to Pro Football Focus, is the pass defense. Weakness is the offensive line. And then they put Cam Robinson as the X factor for the Texans' season.
Interesting. I think that there's something to that because he's replacing the only good offensive lineman that they had last year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that speaks for itself. I will say, to the point of the secondary, Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter both, like, I'm expecting them. Those are super motivated, highly motivated guys. And if you just kind of read some of the stuff from the offseason about how they're moving and how they're operating and how they're approaching this season, they're moving like guys that have been in the league much longer than 1 year, much longer than just going into their second season. They got high goals and aspirations of not just playing second fiddle to Derek Stingley Jr., but carving their own lane and their own path with this Texans defense and in this league. So I'm really excited to see what that looks like, because last year they were doing this kind of just like with wide eyes and not necessarily really knowing what they were doing. They were playing off of sheer ability. Now they're really thinking the game through, on top of the fact that they're still young guys who are extremely explosive and can make plays.
And let me shoehorn this story into Dirty's Daily because I saw it. It's absurd. A guy won $3.6 million playing the lottery in Canada. I don't know if you saw this story.
Good guy.
And his ex-girlfriend took the money and ghosted him. Supposedly, he did not have a bank account.
Oh,
he's playing the lottery. He doesn't have a bank account. So they put it into her bank account.
Oh, my God.
Went to go claim it. They got the big giant's check. And then I don't know the exact timeline, but he said she never returned to the hotel room they were sharing. And he hasn't heard from her since. She ran away with the $3.6 million he supposedly won.
Damn.
I probably shouldn't admit this out loud, but I would not only be hunting for her, but I might kill her.
Ooh.
Sorry to admit it.
Yeah. I think you were good until that last bit.
And let this be a note to anybody in my life who is now. First of all, I got a bank account, and I ain't putting no 3.6 million. I wouldn't put that in my mama's account, and I know where she's going to be at all times.
Oh no!
And trust her implicitly, but it ain't happening.
He also says that he was given bad advice by the Western Canada Lottery Corporation, as they did not warn him of the risks of having his girlfriend sign the winning ticket. So now I think the money, technically, I think becomes hers anyways.
What's the damn amount?
Let me ask y'all, and I know we got to get out of here, but if you don't have a bank account and then you win the lottery, you know, more money than you've ever seen in your life, what's your first order of business? Is it not to go get a bank account? Like, how long
probably
is that?
Buy a briefcase.
How long is that ticket redeemable? And I think you can get a bank account before that ticket expires.
It's a good point.
That would have been literally the first thing that I did.
He was going to walk out of there with that giant check and just go.
Like Happy Gilmore.
Cash it at Walmart or something. I don't know.
I was kidding, by the way, about killing her, but I definitely would want to. I wouldn't do it, but I'd think about it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, someone on the text line said the same thing. If you win $3.6 million, why don't you go open your own account?
It's a thought.
It's a good point.
I mean, it is a novel concept, but go do that.
That is brutal. You win $3.6 million and your now ex-girlfriend runs away with it. Tough. Hey, when we come back, who has the most pressure on them to get this Texans offense right in 2025? We'll do it next.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Right.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
The fellas are out today. Luke Morrow alongside Brandon Scott filling in for them instead here on The Drive. Coming up, who has the most pressure to get this Texans offense right in 2025? We'll get to that. You can always text the show 713-572-4610. Evidently, it seemed like last segment might have come off as a little negative. And I think part of it, I always say, it's like you never hear about all the planes that land. It's more interesting to hear about the planes that unfortunately didn't land correctly. But you never watch the news and they say, hey, by the way, the flight made it safely to JFK this morning.
Yeah, good talk.
Yeah. So, but with that said, I can be a bit of a people pleaser, so I want to make sure everyone's satisfied. And I'll just ask you before we get to the Texans offense, having spent time out at the OTAs, what was the most positive thing? What stood out most to you positively about the Texans?
I think not even just this practice today, but since we've been out there since last week, okay? The most positive thing is feeling like that Jaden Higgins, the top pick that they made in this draft, is the real deal. Now,
the arrow's pointed up.
How much can you really glean from an OTA practice? How much is there really to take away from it? I mean, that's up for debate, and I think that's a fair question to ask. But to the degree in which we can have takeaways from what we see, he looks every bit of the part. So I would say that that's a big thing. Also, for me, and I know people have different feelings about the idea of Derek Stingley fielding punts. Mm-hmm. But every time I see Derek Stingley with the ball in his hands, I get football horny, to use a Clint Sterner right. term that I'm not a big fan of, but I just want to stick with the sort of the theme of the show. Like that gets me excited because
before
I feel
we get
like
that boner.
Man, look, Derek Stingley Jr. is just a dynamic player. I think in any context, I think they should figure out more ways to get the ball in his hands. And I'm not saying that he needs to be like playing two ways and be playing offense per se, but fielding punts, punt returner, I can deal with that. I know there's a lot of maybe apprehension about the injury history and you want to kind of shield him from that. But give me fun over fear. You know, I'd rather have fun than be scared. And the idea of Derek Stingley having the ball in his hand and fielding some punts this year intrigues me. And I watched him before they really got started field some punts with one hand. Like the dude is just, he is a sensei out there, man. He is a football savant. And I want to see more. So Derek Stingley and just laying eyes on him is a positive. Jaden Higgins looking the part, I think, is a positive. So, yeah, no, I think all of those things are things that you can feel really good about.
I remember when Adrian Peterson used to return kicks in his prime. That was electric. Right? You just want to get the ball in some of these guys' hands and let them see, you know, let them do things, even if it's on special teams.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson, in a lot of ways, was the perfect football player. The right combination of size, power, speed, no weaknesses kidding. In his prime.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you want to give him the ball every time?
Yeah, right.
Whenever I don't know why you would do anything else.
Yeah. By the way, we also did make the case that the secondary might be the best in football last segment, so I guess it wasn't all negative.
Yeah. Especially healthy.
That's right.
And they're healthy now.
Yeah.
Did they not hear my Kalen Bullock take? That's my right. Kamari Lassiter take?
Yeah.
That these guys are on an all-pro track. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't actually attain it, that is clearly what they are working toward. Not playing second fiddle to the guy that's already all-pro, but hey, we're here too. I love it.
That's right. You can always text the show, 713-572-4610. Let me call an audible. We'll get to that pressure for the Texans offense coming up in a few minutes for next segment. And instead, let me insert here, still with the Texans offense. I've had this concern now for a couple weeks that I'm worried we might be a little too, it's funny I bring this up now after the conversation we just had, we might be a little too hopeful or positive with the Texans offense or specifically the weapons. And I bring this up because Seth actually put me onto it a couple weeks ago, where he had mentioned last year, C.J. Stroud, when under pressure, was, I'm trying to remember the numbers off the top of my head, I think he was ninth in the first 7 weeks went under pressure in terms of a rating with Stephon Diggs. Once Diggs got injured, he became like 19th under pressure in that rating. And Seth was talking about he went back, he watched the film, and he saw a lot of just small window throws that Diggs, as a veteran, right, was a big help when under pressure. Just kind of throw it up towards him or throw it towards him. Diggs can make the play. And so that got me thinking as I look ahead to this year. Obviously, Stephon Diggs is gone, but you look at some of these weapons and you're relying on Christian Kirk, who, unfortunately, and maybe this isn't fair to label him, but, you know, he's been oft injured in recent years, and I think that should continue to be a concern. And then behind him, you look at a lot of young guys, most notably the two rookies they brought in that many believe will be 3 and 4 in the depth chart. So those are three of your top four receivers. We know what Nico Collins is, but, you know, he was also obviously on the team last year. But when you look at the new pieces brought in for this offense, you have a guy who has injury concerns, and you have two rookies who I'm hopeful, I'm excited, but still draft picks are kind of a 50-50 proposition. Who's to say that they do pan out? So I guess my point in all this is that I feel like there's a wide variance with the offensive weapons, that if everyone hits their ceiling, you could have a really good wide receiving core. But worst case scenario, maybe that's why it's worst case scenario, Christian Kirk deals with some injuries. The rookies take a little longer to develop. You don't have that Stephon Diggs last year that could bail you out of tough situations with a shaky offensive line. I just worry about that worst case scenario this year without someone like Stephon Diggs. And what, you know, when Stroud's under pressure and he looks out there and you see these young guys running around, what that could potentially look like for this offense.
I think the worry is real and valid, because it's not just a, you're not just wondering, you've got a decent enough memory to know what it looked like when it was like that, right? Like it literally just happened. The answer to the question, you've got an actual example of what that looks like, okay? So the rookies clearly weren't here last year because they're rookies. Christian Kirk wasn't here last year, and everybody else who's here was, okay? So like the rest of the options, Nico Collins, obviously great. You need more than that. So what do you have that's beyond that? Okay, John Mechie and Xavier Hutchinson. I think for the roles that we suspect that they'll play, and that's just like complementary receivers, guys that are options but not primary options, I think that they're just fine in those roles. But if the worst case scenario plays out as you describe it and Christian Kirk is banged up and those rookie receivers aren't quite as ready as we feel like they could be and some of us are hoping that they are, then now those other guys are thrust into the positions that they were in last year and didn't necessarily live up to that or didn't necessarily seem like they were ready for that or up for that. And so, no, that does not make you feel good in the context of it being a new offense, a new offensive lineman, and new offensive linemen that are here for a reason, here to fix the problems that they had previously. No, that is not in your confidence, I don't think, if those guys don't, the rookies don't live up to the hope and the expectation, and Christian Kirk is not able to stay healthy. It's a legitimate concern. Who is he supposed to be throwing the ball to? Who are the weapons supposed to be? Are you relying more on Joe Mixon? Are you hoping that Dalton Schultz has a little bit of a bounce back year? We had the conversation earlier in the show about some of the thinnest positions. Mm-hmm. Tight end did not come up, but it easily could have.
Yeah.
So, that I mean, I think it is a valid, while we're hope trafficking, and it is a season for that, it is a time for that. I don't take any shame in that. I think it's just fine to be hopeful and optimistic in June, okay? Mm-hmm. But while we're doing that, I do think the other side of that is being cautiously optimistic about what the reality is. And the reality is you got two unproven guys that are expected to play very key roles and one proven guy who does have an injury history. Mm-hmm. So that's hard to avoid, honestly.
Yeah, which is why I think there's a high ceiling, but I also think, unfortunately, there could be a low floor. To your point, Kick Rocks also said it's got to be the tight ends who get the targets under pressure. But, yeah, I don't know how Texans fans feel about Dalton Schultz right now. So, you know, I don't know if that makes you feel any
better.
He's
soft as baby poo.
There you go. Speaking for all Texans fans, I think many would say something similar.
I got Schultz back.
Yeah, appreciate it. So I don't know if the tight end position or Schultz makes you feel any better in that scenario.
Yeah. No, not at all.
All right, I teased this earlier. Then we called an audible on air. For timing purposes, now we'll get to it when we come back. Who has the most pressure on them to get this Texans offense right in 2025? We'll talk about it next. It's The Drive.
You guys, it's 610 to talk about on the radio.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Luke Morrow and Brandon Scott in for the guys today here on The Drive. Coming up, who has the most pressure on them to get this offense for the Houston Texans where they would like it to be in this 2025 season? Yeah. Talk about that.
This is interesting, man. I've pondered on this ever since you presented it pre-show.
Yeah.
Because I think all of the options are viable. You know, not as a cop-out, but just as a reality of it.
Yeah.
I think you could go a number of different directions. So I'm very curious to see how this segment goes for all of us.
Text the show 713-572-4610 to offer up your thoughts and opinions. Who has the most pressure on them to correct the offense this year? And I guess when I think about that question, I might say that it comes down to, like, who would be blamed the most if things don't work out this year? And
that's an interesting spin on it. That's an interesting spin on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Let's go with that. Who are we going to hold most accountable if things don't work out this year? And so the options that I presented, and feel free to provide your own, but the obvious ones: head coach DeMeco Ryans, obviously new offensive coordinator Nick Caley. Then you have the quarterback, C.J. Stroud, of course, and then Cole Popovich, new offensive line coach. And if you even want to throw maybe, say, the GM for the roster construction, you could do that as well.
Quite frankly, it's bullshit.
It might be. We'll see. I know 713 texted in and said Stroud doesn't have it, whatever that is. I know some people are down on Stroud after what we saw last year and from year one to year two. So who has the most pressure on them to right the ship and correct it? Obviously, Kaylee's the new guy. We saw Stroud last year. DeMeco's been here. Popovich was here, but now in a different role. So when it comes to Stroud, you have something to base it off of. You want to see improvement from last year. Kaylee, maybe there's some sort of learning curve. But who has the most pressure? I will toss it up to you first, Brandon. Who do you think the onus is on the most for this offense? Who do you think might be held the most responsible if things don't improve offensively for the Texans this year?
So I think that the answer has to go to the offensive coordinator, Nick Caley. And I think that it's pretty close between Caley and Cole Popovich, because the primary issue with the offense was the offensive line. I think we can all agree on that part, you know, for all of your, you know, all of our different gripes and things that we might point out about the team. The thing that kept them from going from good to great, or from even mediocre to good, was the offensive line. That was the Achilles heel. They couldn't protect Stroud. They didn't really run block as well, even though the run game was better. But I think that was largely in part because they just had a better running back. They had Joe Mixon, like an actual number one running back. So the offensive line itself, I think, is probably, this is interesting, because the offensive line itself is probably under the most pressure. But from a coaching standpoint, I think it's Nick Caley, and that's because he is the new guy. Like, I think with Cole Popovich, you could say, and let's say the offensive line doesn't perform well, You could maybe excuse that away by just saying, you know what, they're just not good at acquiring offensive linemen. Because that's been my take, that's been my position on it for a while now. Like, or as good as they are at identifying defensive players, they, for whatever reason, have a weakness when it comes to scouting or evaluating or acquiring offensive linemen. I don't know what the reason is, but again, all I can deal with is the results, and the results ain't good. So I know that part. But to me, Cole Popovich was here last year. You could say, like, that just simply changing coaches wasn't enough. They needed a complete overhaul in talent, okay? But for Nick Caley, I think it's much bigger, because you're changing offense and scheme and system and play calling. He's in his first year doing it. And again, I pointed this out earlier when we were talking about the C.J. Stroud injury, but this is just such a critical year in the C.J. Stroud era.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, nobody has any questions about paying the guy. I'm pretty sure that that's going to happen. But just in terms of making the most out of, we talk about this all the time when we're having football conversations, making the most out of the rookie contract of the quarterback, like hitting on the quarterback early, finding out that you hit on the quarterback early, not wasting no time on it. And certainly you did that with C.J. Stroud, with him starting from day one and being good basically from his third game on, right? Or the second half of his second game in the NFL all the way through. He's been a legitimate quarterback ever since then. So it's like, okay, Now, C.J. Stroud's present and future is in the hands of Nick Haley. Okay, and that to me is much bigger than just simply the job that the offensive line coach does. Also, the offensive line coach does still answer to the offensive coordinator. So, like, even to some degree, whatever lack of performance you get from the offensive line coach and the offensive line is still going to fall at the feet of said offensive coordinator Nick Haley. So that to me has got to be the answer. He's responsible for the offense in its totality, but also we have now put the future of C.J. Stroud in his hands, and there's nothing more valuable and more important for this team.
That's interesting, because I actually thought of the other two names I had mentioned. I think I lean more towards C.J. and D'Amico, actually. And I think it also is dependent on where you stop drawing that line. So like you said, Nick Haley oversees the offense. And I'll get to some of these texts in a moment, but I've seen people say, well, yeah, but then D'Amico's the head coach who oversees all of it,
yeah.
So he's responsible for the guy who's responsible for the offense. And then I saw someone say, well, Nick Caserio's the GM who does all the hiring, and the so he's responsible for the guy who's responsible, so on and so forth.
There is a chain reaction here, yeah. A domino effect, if you will.
That sure. Big Nick energy.
So it's everyone has a different opinion of where you kind of draw that line of who you hold most responsible. 832 says it's got to be Caserio. He's responsible, for better or worse, for all the personnel decisions, including the offensive coordinator, O-line, acquisitions, etc. 100% on D'Amico. This year and last year, he needs to coach the whole team. Someone else said D'Amico, period. The answer is CJ. D'Amico commands a top-5 defense. We've changed the offensive line. We've changed the offensive line coach. We changed the offensive coordinator. The only constant has remained CJ Stroud. If he doesn't deliver, it's his fault. Someone said the offensive line and the offensive line coach.
Well, wait a second here, man.
Hold on.
Yeah. Because, look, I was just interacting with one of our texters during the break about, you know, us being a little bit too negative and all of that. Part of the reason why I didn't go with D'Amico or CJ is because I thought that would have been overly negative. They are a huge part of the reason why the Texans are where they are now. Huge part of the reason why they won 10 games over the last couple of seasons. I just felt like those, not to say that there's not pressure on those guys, they're almost obvious answers because they're at the top of the food chain, but they also, to me, have the most equity built up. They have the least to prove. They are the most accomplished of this list. And so, you know, maybe it's, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. If you want to take that, you know, stance or perspective on it, you can. But to me, those are the most proven guys. Those are the guys that I believe in the most. And so, yeah, they got pressure on them. But maybe I answered it the way that I did because the other ones are the ones that are unproven. Those are the guys that ain't shown me nothing. Yeah. I don't know what Nick Haley is as an offensive coordinator. I don't know what Cole Popovich is as an offensive line coach. I still feel I would be shocked if I got to the end of this season and I was somehow doing a complete 180 talking about how D'Amico Ryans ain't no good coach and C.J. Stroud ain't no good quarterback. Like, yeah. I just can't imagine that world. I think the world of both of them. And I got a hard time believing that something's going to happen this season that's going to make me think otherwise. So, yeah, they got the most pressure because they're at the top of the food chain. But at the same time, they're also, again, like I said, they got the most equity built up. I got a hard time believing that they're not going to at least give me, at the bare minimum, what I've seen from them in the previous years.
Yeah, which is interesting because I'm with you on that, which is why I think I go the opposite way.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would give Kaley and Popovich almost a pass, I guess, because it is their first year.
Maybe some grace. Okay.
Although they will have, don't get me wrong, they have a lot of pressure on them. And if things are a disaster, I think there's a lot of pressure on this offensive team that I wouldn't be surprised if Nick Kaley's one and done if he proves the job is too much for him. I think there's a lot of pressure in getting this right. But where I go to Stroud and D'Amico is because they have been here. And while D'Amico is a good head coach, and while he's a very good defensive mind, and he's done a really good job here, and don't forget what things were like before D'Amico arrived here in Houston. Let's not take him for granted. Still, the offense has been the side of the football where, as the one texter I referred to said, you know, coach the whole team. There's this idea of he's the defensive guy. You bring in your buddy Bobby Slowick, it was a disaster. Now if you bring in Nick Kaley, I shouldn't say disaster, that's too strong. But it didn't work out. Now, if you bring in Nick Haley, and that doesn't work either, it's almost like how many opportunities, not that D'Amico will be on the hot seat, but when it comes to specifically the offense, how many opportunities do we have to give you to get this right? Right? You go 0-for-2 in coordinators. And then for Stroud, I've always said this, that I always compare it to the whole, in the music industry, the third album being the big thing. He was great in year one. I don't know any other quarterbacks, please text the show if you can name one, who had a rookie season like C.J. Stroud and then never duplicated it or just fell off. So I am a C.J. Stroud guy. But when you have the good year and then you have the bad year, that third year is kind of the prove it to show us what you really are. And then you talk about the contract, you talk about this, you talk about the opportunity to win while you have the quarterback on that rookie contract. So I think there's a lot of pressure on him. Obviously, there always is, because quarterbacks, it's like the whole quarterback win stat, where obviously that's not just about the quarterback, but we put so much pressure on the quarterback that when the team doesn't win enough, when Lamar Jackson plays well in the playoffs, but his defense fails him, Lamar can't win the playoffs. So it might not be fair, but it always comes back to the quarterback. So I think I lean more towards D'Amico for trying to, as the head man, got to get this side of the football right, and then obviously Stroud, because you're the quarterback, fair or otherwise, it's always going to come down to you, even if you don't have the best play caller or you don't have the strongest offensive line. You know, Patrick Mahomes makes his offense better. Tom Brady seemed to make his receivers better. So you still have to try to get the most out of that offense you can, even if it's not the perfect setup.
So what makes it a fun segment is actually the cop-out answer, which is really all of them.
It's true.
You know, like, and I'm glad I waited to the end of it to make that point. But they're all under a tremendous amount of pressure that I think is just different from the previous years. Obviously, Nick Caley and Cole Popovich are new to their role. And D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud, honeymoon phase in the first year. A lot of anticipation about year two. Wasn't necessarily as great, but the result ended up being the same. And so you can come away from it with a similar feeling like, okay, we're headed in the right direction. Winning a division, double-digit wins, winning a playoff game. The vibes are high. And I guess that's why I went that way. It's like a lot of it has to do maybe less with the question of pressure and more for me with confidence, right? My confidence is pretty high in those other two guys. And therefore, I'm not putting as much pressure on them because I already believe in them and what they do. But the other ones, I don't, because I don't know them. I don't know what they do or how good they are at it. So there's pressure from that standpoint, but it's certainly fine to go with either one of those other ones because they're in higher positions, right? You could just leave it at C.J. Stroud because everything falls at the feet of the quarterback, right? Like it's a quarterback-driven league. And then, of course, the head coach. The head coach-quarterback combination is the most important combination that there is in football anyway. So you could almost say by default that it's on them. But those two guys, Nick Caley and Cole Popovich, are the unproven ones, and they're the ones with something to – C.J. Stroud has proven himself. You know, last year, downgrade, whatever, he's proven himself. D'Amico Ryans has proven himself. They got equity built up. These other two guys, they don't.
Yeah.
They just don't. So there's pressure for them to just simply prove themselves as worthy of the positions that they've been given.
It's true. Yeah, it's all four of them fall into it, and then it just comes down to personal opinion on every Texans fan of who you would blame the most. By the way, I see all the tech. Everyone immediately says RG3. I'm not talking about injuries. A quarterback who had a great first year, obviously, we have to exclude injuries. A quarterback who had a great first year and then just never, he just fell off. He kept getting worse to the point where he was just never that guy again.
Well, and then specific to Stroud, there have been very few rookie seasons like that. Like,
it's true.
You could even argue that the closest thing like it came after it, which was last year.
Yeah.
You know, with Jaden Daniels. So, true. Like, I mean, that part of it, I think, matters that you just rarely have you seen a quarterback perform like that, period, much less drop off after that.
It's true. Yeah, so something similar to Stroud's performance rookie year. People said Vince Young, and then people said Carson Wentz, who also had an injury, though. Or RG3, I should say, in Carson Wentz. Someone said Vince Young, but he completed half of his passes, had more interceptions than touchdowns. He was a different quarterback. I don't count him as having some legendary rookie season. Anyways, if you know of somebody who fits the profile, please text the show. Coming up, it's time for 5 o'clock fire. We'll do it next. It's the Drive.